Well, hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Not here for the roundtable this week because I'm vacationing. Woo, woo, woo. So we have a guest host, which is great, but a couple segments that we have on the back end, which you'll definitely want to be here for. First one is an inbox question with Counselor Jim Grosbeck on kind of a lame roommate situation. So this girl's concerned about her boyfriend's roommate who is kind of just like mooching off of him, basically. That's the way they put it. So Jim weighs in on what this guy can do to kind of lend some boundaries to the situation. And then for our culture segment, we have Gary Barkalow. He is the author of It's Your Call. He is an expert on calling. He has years in the HR industry, as well as in ministry. And he wants to talk to you about what it means to live out of a calling that God has truly called you to and how that calling may shift and how we grow in our faith as a result of that. And then here we are for our roundtable. Leon Worth, who is the executive director of parenting at Focus on the Family, is going to lead a discussion with a group of guys on what it means to prepare for becoming a provider for your wife and eventually your children. So here we go.
Well, welcome to the roundtable today. We have with us Kevin Goslin and Travis Williams. And today, guys, we want to talk about the pressures that we feel, that transition point when it starts to dawn on us, either we're entering marriage or it might be when our first baby arrives or something like that, where the weight of being a provider for our family is really on us. Now, I can't say that I can relate to that because when I got married, that wasn't on my mind at all. And if you believe that, I've got a bridge to sell you because I think every guy really goes through feeling some questions, some doubts, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to do this? What if all the what ifs that come up into your mind? What if this happens? What if that happens? But before we jump into that, why don't you guys tell us again a little bit about, I know you've been on the programs before, but tell us a little bit about, you know, how long have you been married and maybe a little bit of the circumstances that you were facing when you entered into marriage.
Wow. So I have been married to my wife, Devin. This is Travis Williams. Been married to my wife, Devin, for 6 years. And, you know, before getting married, I think anytime you're in that transition phase, you're not sure what's going to be going on. You're thinking, Well, I'm single now, and I've got a little bit of disposable income, and what should I do? You know, what should I do with that? And how should I buy a house? Should I, what are the circumstances, that are going to help set us up? Or should I get too tied down with really anything?
Right.
And you're thinking even about jobs. Do I hold on to my career strongly? Because what happens when I get married? Do I have to shift? So I think I was just in a really big point of questioning.
Yeah.
What ifs? What do I do?
Right.
Maybe some of the listeners can relate.
Maybe some of the guys in this room can relate.
Yeah, I don't think those questions really go away sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is Kevin, and Suzanne and I have been married 3.5 years, and we have 2 kids, a 2-year-old and a 6-month-old. And I remember as I was preparing for getting married as a young adult, I was thinking, okay, if I have $10,000 in the bank and I have a house and I have a car, I'll be all right. Because and as little debt as possible, this will be fine. Money will make it work. And wow, that's I had none of that going into marriage. And so, but
join
even
the
more,
club.
Yeah. So it's that added to kind of the complexity for me is having to rethink that through as we got married and started to engage in married life. What I did leading up to that, and how that affected that, and kind of as you were sharing. You have that disposable income. I started saving for marriage, and I was getting there, and I had been pursuing a gal at the time, and that fell through, and I just was like, you know what? I don't need this anymore. I went out and bought a car. I bought a mountain bike. I blew it all and met Suzanne like 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
So it was, oops.
I think Kevin and I shared that. I had tremendous heartbreak as well, and that... That all of a sudden you think of doing everything wisely, then that guy component in you kicks in. And I have a total gym in my basement to prove that period of my in my life.
And it's an asset you could always get rid of if you need to liquidate, right?
No way.
Well, I think this brings up a really interesting question that I know I've heard from young guys before. And that question is, what does it mean to really be financially stable enough to get married? You know, I'd be interested in what you guys' perspective would be on that when you see, you know, you see marriages happening at every socioeconomic, you know, background. Obviously, there's probably not a magic formula for it. But what would you guys say was a point in which you were saying, okay, I think there's enough here for me to take the plunge. And that's not just the marriage plunge, but just that commitment plunge, if you will, with what I have, with what I am hoping to have or expecting to be able to do or to provide, I think I'm ready. How would you guys answer that question for listeners who might be struggling with that?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I don't, like you said, I don't know if there's a hard and fast answer. You know, God's going to move. But I think the bigger issue is, are you being a responsible guy with the time that you have and the resources that you have? So I would probably just even back up the bus a little bit before thinking about marriage. Are you, as a single guy, thinking ahead? In fact, I was reading this proverb this morning. I can't help but quote a little scripture now and then. A sensible man watches for problems. Not that getting married is a problem,
right?
But watches for problems ahead and prepares to meet them. The simpleton never looks and suffers the consequences. And again, not that marriage is a problem, but it's going to be something that you probably want to engage in. So what are you doing as a single person to hold the responsibility as a man? Sometimes we even think that, you know, finances is the big issue. I don't know if it is. I was thinking through this and I said, you know, probably the first thing that I would do if you're thinking about getting married or you want to have that responsibility is have some other responsibilities outside of marriage. So that means, fellas, get a job.
Right.
That would be my step one. Get a job. How are you actually managing that first job out of college? And I think that as a gal, I'd kind of want to watch this new guy that you're dating. How is he handling that job that he's been given, whether it's $8 an hour or, you know, maybe he's making big bang. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you just said as a gal, and now you've got me trying to picture you as a gal, and that's not really working very well, Travis. So let's go over to Kevin. Now that we've been sidetracked by that, Kevin, what are your thoughts on that question?
Yeah, I would agree. I think, I think that having a plan, this is where Suzanne and I have talked a lot about this. When we started dating and getting to know each other, I was a shift supervisor at Starbucks and didn't make a lot of money doing that, but I had a plan and I was moving up and I was, you know, going after the assistant manager role, the store manager role. And that gave Suzanne a sense of security to know that this wasn't my end all job. We joke about being a ski bum and a raft guide and buying my VW van that I can go sleep in the mountains. And that was it. That was my life. And because maybe that is a sense of security for some women, but for
not
Suzanne,
that there's anything wrong with that.
No, right? There's no, none of that, but that wasn't what Suzanne needed. And so for her to be able to hear that I had a plan and that I was striving for a plan, it gave her this sense of like, okay, I can get into a relationship. I can get into a commitment with this guy because there's more to it. And I think that's getting, as you were talking, your question, you know, is financially kind of the end all. I don't think it is either. I think paycheck, it's not giving them what they need fully. There's more to marriage than just that paycheck. Paycheck doesn't equal that. There's a lot that more of, you know, the spiritual support, the emotional support, and even just being physically around support that I think as young guys preparing, being aware of that, is very important for women.
Yeah.
I think it's so easy to fall into the trap, even after you've been married several years like I have. We're about to celebrate our 20th anniversary this summer.
Congrats.
Thank you. And, you know, I look back and all of the things I've been learning, I'm still learning, you know, in our journey and providing a paycheck. Those paychecks come and go. Jobs come and go. sometimes in expected ways and sometimes in unexpected ways. You know, I've gone through three unexpected job transitions myself, but I think you guys are hitting on something so important, and that is looking at your role as a provider beyond just the financial. You know, when Ephesians 5, Paul talks about, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. And that's not, you know, it's not like Jesus was writing checks to the church, you know. Jesus provides for us in so many different ways. And it's really important for us, I think, as men, to really wrestle with, am I ready? Am I ready to accept the challenge, even if I'm not sure what I'm getting fully into? Am I ready to accept the challenge of being a provider beyond just the financial, a provider for her heart, for her emotions, for spiritual leadership, as that passage also talks about, you know, washing her with the word, mm-hmm. and as Christ does for the church. So I think you guys are hitting on something important. What would you say are maybe some of the ways that we as guys need to not just in preparation for those phases of our life, but even as we're continuing to walk through those phases of our life, how do you think we need to be looking at that as men and looking for opportunities and needs that maybe God is giving us an opportunity to fulfill a need, to provide for a need that is out of what we would normally expect when we think typically of jobs and home and food on the table and that sort of thing?
Well, great thought, Leon. I think that the component when you're speaking, and it kind of goes back to my earlier comment of responsibility, is that selfish nature. You know, what's driving you to really want to get married?
Right.
And sadly, I think sometimes the equation is, man, I think she's beautiful.
Right.
She's going to look really good on my arm. Or I think we're going to have a fantastic, you know, nightlife or whatever it is and it's kind of a selfish nature that's driving you. And I think even as guys, as we go through marriage, we can still have that selfish nature going, well, hey, this is about me. And even if you do become the provider, wait a minute, honey, I'm the provider. And it, you know, you kind of jump back to that financial component, but what are you being selfish? You know, are you honoring your wife like Christ love the church? Are you willing to give it all?
Mm-hmm.
And I think your checkbook, not to go back to the finances, but your checkbook really is a reflection of that. If you want to show me where your heart really is, show me your balance sheet.
Yeah.
show me your checkbook. And that's going to tell me a lot about where you as a guy and your heart truly
where
is.
Your treasure is, that there
exactly.
Where your heart
and
be
even,
also.
Even
yeah.
in marriage.
Yeah.
You know, if I see 1-800 flowers to your wife, I can probably guarantee you're trying to honor her.
And I think as a young adult preparing, it's in marriage, healthy relationship is key, mm-hmm. and it is all those components of spiritual and emotional and being physically present, just to be there. And I think as a young adult, as a woman looking for something in a man, if he can have healthy relationships with other females, with other guys, and you can observe that, then that's going to lend itself to a better marriage. Whereas if it's somebody who can't manage relationships well, they don't have a lot of friends, they walk into a room and it's kind of awkward, it's going to bring that into marriage eventually, and that will eventually come up. And maybe in the moment as you're dating, hey, you're front and center and it seems like that, but once you get married, you start getting into it, and things come up. Whether
what if he's loaded?
But that's where it's paycheck doesn't equal provision or
exactly.
being able to provide. And
that's such
and I think that's
thing.
Where if young adults and young men are thinking, how do I prepare myself for a healthy marriage? Well, in the moment, have healthy relationships with the opposite sex and with the same, you know, and mm-hmm. just being able to manage those well will lend itself to being able to relate, and when you get frustrated, being able to relate and communicate, because that happens in friendships. And if you've already been working on that, it ends better in marriage than if you don't have that skill set going into it.
Well, let's get back a little bit to the whole idea of how we provide for our wife, for our family, from sort of that employment perspective. And let me ask you guys this question. When you got married, did you already have settled in your mind this is who I am. This is what I want to be when I grow up. This is my trajectory. I've got my sense of calling, my sense of purpose, my career path. It's all in front of me, and now I'm ready to get married? Or was it a bit more of a, yeah, I'm still trying to figure that all out, but I'm ready to take the plunge anyway?
Wow, I think sometimes you think you have it all figured out. I mean, it's really my case. There's many things that I feel like, yes, I'm 100% right on. I know, just even in my own personal life and personal journey, you know, even career paths. And but you know what? After a few years under my belt of being married and everything else, is God can change a lot of dynamics. So I have a tendency not to focus on all of those other dynamics that get thrown in. My mind goes back to the principles of God's word. Are you living with conviction? Are you living responsibly? Are you following him with all of your heart? And that's, so I have a tendency to kind of camp out that way, because I've seen life, as much as we think it's going to have this certain trajectory, at least for me, it's been a bunch of bullet points. And I look back and I go, God, I don't understand. Even this financial, you know, how you took things financially. I thought I was going here, and now I'm here, you know, at a lower level.
Right.
What's this all mean?
But that can be so encouraging, I think, to a lot of young guys, because I think you're demonstrating how you can move beyond some of those questions and don't just camp on those questions. But I know that that's where a lot of guys really are. There's a real concern about, well, if I don't have that figured out, what am I asking this woman to do by joining me in this life's journey where I don't even have some of the basics of my own, you know, my own career or my own calling kind of figured out? What was your experience on that, Kevin? Yeah,
and I think I'm a little bit different, because June 6, 1999, I was 13 years old. I felt God called me to children's ministry. Clear as day, I knew it from that day that that's the path I wanted to be on. And what that looks like, you know, now what it looks like in 10 years wasn't in the picture yet, and I had to work towards that and still have to. I think for me, it was being attentive to where God has you in that moment, right, and fully buying into that and still pursuing that. And so when Suzanne and I met, I was working at Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not children's ministry. And yet I knew my calling was children's ministry.
You were probably ministering to a lot of moms who were looking for a coffee break, right?
Yes. A lot of soccer moms coming through. And so, but it was in that moment where I felt like this is where God has me right now, and I'm going to pursue it with excellence, and I'm going to follow through as best as I can. And that, I think, was a really good thing. And for me, part of my relationship with Suzanne was she had to be willing to engage with children's ministry. Mm-hmm. I remember a gal that I was pursuing, her dad kind of sat me down and said, "Are you sure? Like, are you sure? Because ministry can be tough and church can be tough and you could get burned, and my daughter could get burned, and are
you
sure?"
Church ministry.
Yeah.
Are you sure? Because if you're sure, that's great. Or was it more of a, are you sure? Because if you're sure, I'm not so sure about you.
It was the second one. It was more of the, I'm not so sure about you.
And, I see.
And he had come out of some church leadership and some of that. And so I understood where he was coming from, but I knew that was my calling. And so if Suzanne and I sat down and she said, "No, I'm not okay with being in church leadership. I'm not okay with that," we wouldn't have continued on.
Right.
But that doesn't go to say if you don't know that, then that's okay. It's being where God has you, and as long as you're okay with that and continuing to move forward and pursuing that, I think that's what a woman wants to hear. That's what she wants to engage with, as opposed to, "Well, I don't really have a calling. I don't know what I want to do, but you know, changing oil sounds fun, so I'm gonna go do it."
Well, I think you bring up a good point, and that's probably closer to my story is what you've said is, I, you know, God, you know, as a believer, you probably have those things in your heart. This is where I want, you know, I really envision this going, but sometimes the path isn't as clear, and sometimes as guys, we'll be like, "Oh no, God's called me to be a pastor, and I'm not going to take a job because I'm going to be a pastor, and or I'm not going to get married until I'm this, and I'm going to wait and wait and wait." And I think sometimes God says, "Dude, get a job."
Yep.
Get a job. Mm-hmm. Work at Starbucks. Part of this is my training and preparation for where I want to take you. And you've probably been a better pastor from working at Starbucks than if you hadn't have had that experience.
Yeah, and it did. And I can look back and see that God had me there for a reason, for a specific length of time. I remember many a nights coming home and going, God, why am I here? Like, you've called me to children's ministry. Like, when does that happen? Right. You know, and I was serving in a volunteer role or part-time role, stuff like that. But full-time, fully invested in, and God was saying, Kevin, there's more I want you to learn. Mm-hmm. I want you to learn more. There's a little bit more. And after Suzanne and I got married, I remember one of the first conversations we started praying, like, God, I want to be in children's ministry. When do I get to go? And we looked at the job I eventually got at our current church in November and said, all right, God, we prayed about it and we felt very clearly God said no. And so we just wrote it off. Well, that's not the church for us. That's not the job for me. And then in March, some things had happened that kind of made us come back to that question. All right, God, I really don't like being here right now. When do I get to be in ministry? And it was very clear, hey, I want you to go check that job out again. Mm. I was like, but God, you said no. He said, no, I said wait. And yeah. You thought I said no, but I said wait. And had I applied for the job in November, I would not have gotten it. Mm. But through the experience I got those next few months at Starbucks, it set me up for success in that role. So again, going back to that, being willing to be in the moment of where God has you is key.
Yeah, and I think being responsible with those moments. Right. I mean, I have a tendency to beat a dead horse, but guys, you got to take responsibility and be where God has you and take a faith step. If you don't feel like something's moving, you've got to get a job. Right. You're going to learn a lot through that job. If you want to be a pastor, get a job. You'll learn more as a meat packer, probably experience on how to relate to people than you will at the seminary. So just do that. And then the other thing that I would say is start having a framework of money. What is your framework of money? Hmm. Somebody shared this little thought with me, and I thought it was good, is, you know, give, save, live off the rest. Start tithing, start saving, because you may be in a position, unless you just want to get crazy and get far into debt, you know, you can do that, but I wouldn't recommend it. and live off the rough. One day you're going to want to buy a ring for a gal. Why not start saving today?
Yeah. Yep.
For that. I mean, instead of blowing $100 on two video games that you won't be excited to play 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Save that up and be excited for the smile on the gal's face when you finally do get the opportunity to propose. And get out of debt. That'd be the last thing. Start working on that debt. If you got the debt, you're going to carry it into your marriage. Yep. So,
well, you guys are hitting on something that's really important that I think has to be a key takeaway for this discussion. And that is, we have to open our eyes to opportunities around us and be willing to be faithful to what's in front of us today. Whether that is a job that seems like, wow, this is far afield from where I want to be. But it's there. It's in front of me. You know, being willing to say, no job is beneath me. Mm. There's dignity in work. There's dignity in, you know, in getting a paycheck and investing myself and doing something with all of my heart and ability. And being willing to just, you know, live for Christ faithfully wherever we happen to be in the moment in the day.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think is so important. You had something else you wanted to add, Kevin?
Well, I was just going to chime in on that. I think, you know, I've met some guys who say, I've got the money. Like, I'm ready for the ring. I'm ready. But they haven't done anything to build the healthy relationships. And so I think it's a both and.
It is. You're right.
I agree with the money, because you'll hear it. You know, what's the biggest argument in marriage? Yeah. It's money. You know, and there is that element. But I think some guys get there and they're like, well, I got all the money. Like, hey, who wants me? Like,
right.
I'm ready. I've got
ladies,
a really nice ring, too.
I am available for you.
Yeah. But if you walk into the room and you're like, You do nothing but kind of are targeting girls that you want to be with, and you're not building the healthy relationships around that. They're going, I'll be broke if I can. As a going into marriage, I'd rather go into marriage broke with somebody that I love and love the relationship with, and we're gonna struggle through it together, as opposed to going into marriage with somebody who can buy me a nice car and a house and provide for everything. I never have to work a day in my life again.
Right.
The toss up is
right.
I'd go with the second. And I think a lot of girls out there would say, I will go with the second as well. Right. And they want that. It's a both and.
Yeah.
So
I totally agree.
Because if you're totally irresponsible with the money, then they're not going to jump in
either. I'm saying it really to the dudes that have nothing going on. You've got to, become the person in Christ that he really wants you to be.
Exactly.
Take advantage of the opportunities. Utilize the opportunities that he's put before you. And it doesn't hurt if you can start being financially responsible.
Well said.
Because your wife, your future wife, will probably appreciate that.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that ideal, if you guys are struggling together, that can be awesome as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said.
Well, guys, thanks. That's been a great conversation. And I just want to close maybe with this one quick thought from Proverbs as well, that this has been so important to my wife and I through the years. As we try to do our best to, sort of pick a direction and walk faithfully in it, and wrestle with that, are we doing God's will or not? In Proverbs 16, verse 9, it says, "In his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps."
Amen.
And I think that proverb really captures that sort of open-handedness and that kind of combination of, it's okay for us to make our plans and to have our strategy and to think, okay, financially or career-wise, this is the direction I want to be taking. This is where I want to be going. But keep those hands open so that if God directs you in a different way, you're ready. Mm-hmm. You have a heart that's willing to say, "Yes, Lord, I'm willing to do something unexpected here." Mm-hmm. And I think if that is our heart's desire, if that is where our heart is placed and positioned before the Lord, we'll be all right. We'll be all right. So thanks again, guys, for a great conversation.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah,
thank you.
Perfect love, your perfect love. You're opening my ears to hear the sound of a lover's voice. You're calling out, you're calling out. Let me see your face, your lovely face, your
everyone, we are up for another culture segment here in this week's show, and I just love it when we find authors that are saying something that resonates with our audience, and this week is no exception. I have got Gary Barkalow here with me. Gary, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Very exciting. Gary is the author, and this is what we're going to be talking about and around today. His book is called It's Your Call, What Are You Doing Here? I love it. It has a little can on the front, a little hanging, with the string when you feel like, oh, is God calling me? I don't know. And if he says something I don't want to hear, then I will just hang up. But anyway, a great book. Gary actually was here at Focus on the Family for a while, and I know near the end of your stint here, Gary, you were in HR, and we're really starting to flesh out a lot of things around calling. Mm-hmm. And much of what we have here at Focus pertaining to our what we talk about, the Focus story and kind of the bigger picture and our role in God's bigger plan for what he's accomplishing. I know you were walking through some of that at the time and helped us craft kind of our Focus story in the midst of that. So this is exciting. And this is so great, folks, because it's like we bring someone like Gary in and it's like you almost have your own little personal coaching session, because here he is. We have him for 20 minutes and we're just going to pick his brain. So Gary, this is no surprise that you wrote this book. Like I said, with the introduction I gave and what you're passionate about. And I like the way you start the book and some of the themes that you talk around, and we're going to land on a few of them. But you start off by talking about our lives having what you describe as a weightiness. And I think that is good news for people in our audience, because a lot of them maybe came out of bad stories, bad families, you know, or wondering, you know, you talk a lot about one of the biggest questions, even among Christians, hello, people, is what is my purpose? People, why do we not know our purpose? Right. It's just like so crazy. But I think in you describing weightiness, can you explain that a little bit and what that means for believers?
Yeah. You know, so many times people think that what they bring to the world are simply the skills and abilities that they acquire over time. And you can really divorce those things from your own self, from your heart, your life. And I am convinced that our calling is to bring us, our life, this weighty thing about us, to the world. And it really is who we are. And we know the idea of weightiness, right? Someone comes in the room and they have a presence. And I'm not talking about a domineering presence or a loud presence. But there is just something, you know, they're in the room and they carry something. And everybody carries something like that. It's easy to think, oh, there's just other people that do. But everyone carries a weightiness, a brilliance, a splendor to their life. And their calling really is to simply bring that to the world.
Hmm. So what would you say, you know, you talk about that, and there are some people that are listening right now that are like, well, whatever, but whatever I bring into the room is not nearly as apparent or as bold or as big as what they're bringing into the room. So how can someone kind of discover that uniqueness in themselves, someone who's maybe a little quieter or still figuring that out?
Yeah, and it really doesn't have anything to do with being a personality, which mm-hmm. is what we think about. Mm-hmm. When we think about people with big callings, we think of personalities. This has nothing to do with personality whatsoever. So where we have to go to discover what this weightiness, this brilliance that we bring to the world is we have to go to our desires, which is not where most people want to go. They want to go right to skills, abilities, experience, education. But it really is to the desires, because God said in Philippians 2:13, it says, "For it is God who is developing in you both the desire and the ability to do what pleases him." So you go to desire. I mean, the really good news is that what we are supposed to do is what we most want to do. Now, there's a lot of unraveling of what I want to do that we have to do to find that, but that's where we have to go, is to our desires.
Yeah. Well, which is huge, because I think that we're naturally conditioned to stamp down desire and to say, oh, that's probably selfish. It's probably, you know, you and I were talking before we started taping about if I'm going to do something for God, I'm sure I probably have to hate it. It's going to have to be, you know, something right. I'm called to the, you know, mission field, or yep. I'm called to whatever. But how, let's talk about that a little bit, because how can we truly find what we love and recognize that it really can be our calling and it can be used for the glory of God?
Well, once again, there's several things we have to look at. Mm-hmm. We do have to go after desire. Mm-hmm. And that's something we have to sort through, interpret, try to understand, because there are many things that have happened in our life. And so those desires become tainted, contaminated, wounded, because every wound that we receive goes into the area and somehow attaches to desire, the desire never to have that happen again, or mm-hmm. desire to be somebody, and so on. So it's an area that we have to delve into and kind of look at. The other is story, our own story. I mean, God is an architect, an engineer, a choreographer. And so you have to be able to look back at your life and see, what has God been doing? Because he has been up to something our whole life. He's not random. And he knows who we are and what we bring to the world. So he is engineering things. So we have to look back at our story, both to see what God has been up to, circumstantially or scripturally, we may say, with his providence. And in the midst of our story, we do start to discover what our true desires are. Not in this particular second, because that can be very deceptive, mm-hmm. but we look back at our life and we see there are patterns of desire, and that's who we truly are.
Hmm. So can you maybe use a little bit of your own story as an example of how you came through this process? Because I think, you know, maybe someone here who's listening who's like 22 is like, I don't even know where to start with that. I don't even know.
Yeah.
So how did this really become a realization for you?
Okay. So going back to college, I remember one of the freshman classes that I had to take in every other freshman was freshman psychology. And I was fascinated by it. I mean, some of it seems strange, but I had never been introduced to the idea of, why do we do what we do? How does thinking take place, and so on? And I was fascinated by it. Now, I'm not a psychology major, but I was fascinated by that. I went into business mainly because my dad said, you need to go into business. So I went into business and I took a business psychology class that's simply called marketing. And I was fascinated by it. And I You know, it's funny. I don't think I really was that aware of my fascination with it then, because I just wasn't as alert to what I should be watching. I wasn't as alert and oriented as I should have been back then. But those topics fascinated me. So there was another thing. I was a gymnast through high school and then through college. Competed through college and actually for another 10 years after that. Started a gymnastics center, which I thought was my dream. And so I ran this gymnastics center for 6.5 years. And at the end of that 6.5 years, I was so tired of it. I was tired of cleaning the gym, recruiting kids, hiring teachers, you know, dealing with parents. And I thought, you know, I thought I would love this, but this is not what I love so much. And so I just sensed as I was praying through this, God saying, well, Gary, what is it that you've always loved about gymnastics? I mean, that's been a good 15 years of my life at this point. What did you love about a gymnastics center? Well, as I thought and prayed through what I sensed God was saying to me, I thought, you know, I love figuring out what makes a great performance in gymnastics. What are the elements that are needed? How do you train and prepare for those things? How do you bring who you are to it? And you simply don't imitate someone else that you've seen and admired. And I felt like God said, see, that's who you are. You love to understand what a person's life is about. How do they train and prepare for it? How do they truly be themselves? They bring themselves to the world, not simply imitate someone else. So God was saying, you see that desire that went through what you loved about certain classes, what you loved about gymnastics? That's who you truly are. Bring that to the world.
So let's talk a little bit about, because that's good and that's interesting how you, I mean, obviously you found that in what you were doing then, or how you could have, you know, done that with what you were doing then, and then obviously with where you are now. I was sharing with you a little bit about how I think with this audience, with millennials, we almost err on the side of this calling has to be big. I think it's almost a danger now that we have access to so many blogs and so many, you know, other people's stories because we have calling envy, kind of. Yeah. Where yeah. You know, it's like, oh my goodness, you know, she adopted 12 kids in Africa, or she's digging wells over there, or he's doing this and started his own ministry and now is doing this. And how can, for someone, you know, regardless of where God calls them in the future, how can that young adult who is paying off college debt, in their first job, has a terrible boss, doesn't really know where they're going to go from here, where do they find their calling in that?
Well, okay, I love this question, because what I want to tell people is your calling is not tied to the economy. It's not tied to money. Mm-hmm. It's not tied to experience or title. And we tend to think it is. If only I had more money, if only I had a better job, if only the economy was better. Our calling is not tied to that whatsoever. It's simply bringing this internal brilliance, weightiness, splendor, beauty, strength that we have to wherever we are at the moment. So what I'll tell people is, first of all, right where you are, start bringing your particular way of seeing, your particular way of hearing, what you can see that no one else sees, you're aware of. Start bringing that. Start speaking up a little bit. Start offering more. And not only will that start to develop, but you will get clarity as to, should I be here or should I not? I've known people have said, I'm doing something I hate, but as they started bringing who they truly are to the job, after a while I go, you know, actually I'm really enjoying it. And nothing has changed except me. I'm bringing more of me. And I do think this is my present assignment. And one day, yeah, I hope to get to Uganda and drill wells. And so you keep that as something you aspire to. But again, what we have to stay away from is imitating others with, as you said, the calling envy, which how many people have gone off and done something and turned around and said, how did I get here? I absolutely do not like what I'm doing. This is not me, but now I feel stuck.
Yeah. Well, and a good point and a good transition, because you also talk about this is not necessarily just a cakewalk. We actually have the enemy who is seeking to thwart anything that we would bring to the table, whether, you know, not only the weightiness, but where our calling is, you know, trying to cloud our vision. What are some of the dangers in that, and how can we recognize that?
Well, yeah, it's absolutely essential to know that we have someone who is working against us and our calling. Mm-hmm. We have an enemy in spiritual terms, and he will do everything he can to either, and I just see this pattern, he will either try to get you to distance yourself from your heart. He'll bring in experiences and you'll think, I don't want to feel this anymore. I don't want to try this anymore. This is awful. Hmm. He'll try to do that. If he doesn't get you to back away from your desires because of some maybe hard, wounding circumstances, and you say, no, I've got to understand who I am by looking at my desires. If that doesn't work, he'll try this tactic that I call diminishment, right? We'll come in, and it's often sensed as this accusation we hear again and again and again. It may be something like, well, who are you to say anything? Hmm. Or you don't know enough, or no one wants to hear from you, or something like that. And he'll play that. And if we agree with that, we will stop offering to the world and we stop our journey. If that doesn't work, then he'll play the disdain card, where he'll come in and you'll offer a couple times, and each time you do, someone will criticize you for it. Like, you know, I didn't ask you for your opinion, or that kind of thing. And we get to the point where we think, God, would you turn this off? This thing that this ability I have to see what's wrong or what's right or so on, because I don't want to encounter that wounding anymore in my life. So we will actually start to disdain the very thing that we carry. Hmm. Now, if that doesn't work, his last card that he loves to play is a disqualification card, where we hear that voice that says, I know what you did. I know what you thought. I know what you went through. You are disqualified from bringing anything to the world. And we cannot play with that card either. We have to bring back scripture and say, I am not disqualified. Romans says, you know, for the gifting and the call of God is irrevocable. So if we don't see that we have an enemy, we will get blindsided and taken out every time, and there'll be no progress.
Hmm. Okay. So let's, I want to kind of get back a little bit to desire as well, because you alluded to desire. What are some ways that we can determine what desires are right and good and what are misleading, whether they are selfish or whether they are, you know, just someone else's? We're copying on someone else's desires and we feel like, you know, we don't have our identity crisis is kind of flaring up. How can we discern?
Well, there are three basic categories. One is we need to listen to our heart, and I'll talk about these quickly. The other is you need to listen to God, and the other is you need to listen to others. So let me real quickly start with listening to others, because it's the very thing that we carry, because the warfare against us is inside of us. It's personal. We need other people to listen and look at our life, because when we're thinking, you know, this thing, it's not that important. It's not that helpful. We need someone else to say, oh, it is. It's really helped me. You carry something I don't carry. We absolutely need the eyes of others on our life. And for people, they're not under the warfare we are over our gifting. So they can say, you know, that's a lie that you're hearing. That's not true. No one else is thinking or saying that. That's an internal voice. You need to fight that. So we absolutely need others. We need to get close friends who know us well and journey with us. So let me go back to the first one, listening to our heart. You know, there are so many things, particularly today, that we are aware of. I mean, I can watch, you know, a 30, 60-minute documentary on something, and I'm convinced that I'm supposed to be doing that now. Mm-hmm. And they're, because they're so passionate and they're so available. But that doesn't mean that's what we're supposed to be doing. So we have to look at what's the strongest desire in our life. What's that thing that we say, I'm not hoping simply someone else does it. I have to do it now. Mm-hmm. It's not someone else. It's me. Mm-hmm. It's
I've heard
my battle.
Bill Hybels call that a holy discontent.
Yes, a holy discontent. What a great term for that. We have to find those things. We also have to find not only strength of desire, but consistency of desire. There are certain things that have been true our entire life. And that's why we have to go back and look at our story, because God implanted that in us. So you look back at your story and say, you know, my whole life, I've always been curious about this. I've always been moved by this. I've always been bothered by this. We need to look at consistency of desire. That will ferret out all those other things that are not true about us. We need to look at stories of desire. There are certain stories that we have been moved by, you know, and probably more in terms of movies, because that's more of the story is how they come to us today. There are certain movies that will bring us to tears. There are the movies that we will, you know, rent or purchase or download because there's something that's true about us. That's saying something. It really is. But we have to delve into, what is it about the movie? What's the theme? Who is the character? What was it about them that seems to be so true to me? And we need to take that seriously, because our heart is saying something in that. And then the last thing I'll throw out are there are certain words of desire that are true of us, right? Our friends say, you always use these words. You always use these phrases. And we can laugh about them, and we probably should, but the fact is it says something about who we are. It resonates with us. So those would be ways we could look at this.
Okay. So you say, and again, you know, folks, the book is It's Your Call, and there is just a lot that Gary walks through that we're not even touching on here. But one thing that you do allude to in the book is mystery and this idea of mystery and almost an idea of being comfortable with mystery. And, you know, how do we marry mystery with then that prodding to actually go for some movement? So because, you know, like you said, you know, that person that has been told your opinion doesn't matter, you don't need to say, you know, are there times when uncomfortably so we have to just break free and we have to be like, okay, I'm going to have to just step out and do this. I mean, it may not seem natural, but it may, I mean, is there a time for just out and out movement? And how do we understand that in light of the mystery, the things that we're just not going to know?
Right. Well, yes. And most people treat mystery as their ignorance. They've done something wrong. They ought to know. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is mystery is a fact of everybody's life. There's nothing to disdain about mystery. Mm-hmm. But if we don't embrace mystery as something good and as part of life for everyone, and we disdain it, then we get paralyzed by it. We won't move. We think there's something wrong with us. Or there's something wrong with God. He just won't speak to us. Hmm. So if we'd embrace it, we'd actually walk into it and go, all right, I'm going to do what Jesus said. I'm going to ask, seek, and knock. This is an adventure. I just want to find out what this mystery is about. I don't know about this, so let me see what God will reveal to me. So we have to move forward for mystery to eventually become clarity, which it will in time, but not to disdain it, and especially to the point of thinking there's something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so as we close here, you have to tell the story of your experience with the 1984 Olympics and the Eagle, because I thought this was such a great example of how, I just thought this was a great way to summarize some of the points that you were making of really an awareness. You know, a lot of people didn't know that this happened, and Gary had kind of the inside track to seeing this presence of this great eagle that was supposed to be in the 84 Olympics. But what life lesson you got from it and how you were able to apply that?
Okay, so in 1984, I was in Los Angeles running a gymnastics center, and the choreographers came for the Summer Olympics and said, we need some of your adult male gymnasts to be in this. So we were in it, and that this is where we heard that they wanted to have an American bald eagle fly around the USC Coliseum during the playing of the national anthem. And the goal was that at the ending of that song, it would then land on the Olympic rings. Hmm. But what happened was that 2 weeks before the opening ceremonies, it died in a rehearsal right there at the USC Coliseum of vascular collapse and a bacterial infection. So it never happened. And so the trainer wrote an epitaph for the eagle, and he said, that the eagle failed to do what he was created to do because he had been wounded and in captivity for so long. And I was just very struck by this whole thing. And I thought there's something that feels deeper than just that eagle and just that moment. And I realized that it's so easy for us to fail in the moments when God says, you're up, only you can do this. You carry something that is essential in this moment. No one else can bring this. But so many times we fail because we're not trained, we're not developed. We have been in captivity for so long that we are, as he said, fat and coddled, and we're not prepared for the moment. And so, yes, we have this weightiness to bring, and we need to look at the desires of our heart, and God will reveal those things. But there is a training, a developmental process, so that we can become the person who can really carry it well, handle it well. Because, I mean, we know so many very gifted people, but you look at their life and you go, I don't think I want to be like that person. And you see the damage around them, even though what they can do is good. So God needs to develop our strength of heart so we can handle the desires of our heart well. He really does have to train us. And if we don't understand that, we'll interpret it as either God is just not for us, or the, quote, favor of God is not on us, or why does he treat us so harshly, when really he's saying, no, I'm training you for these important moments where you have to step up and you have to do it.
Yeah. Well, and I just love, I mean, that illustration, it just what came to mind is how that training so often will happen in those small spaces. I mean, it'll happen at your desk. It'll happen in that small church ministry. It'll happen as you're faithful to build relationships within your family and your circles of friends. You know, it's as you're faithful in prayer. And so I think that's such a great lesson for all of us, especially those in the millennial generation who feel like they're not enough, who feel like they're not contributing, or where is my place and what does that look like?
Well, and as you said, people tend to look at the big public stories of people and their quote calling. And they hear these stories about training, you know, when you gone to or to seminary, whatever. But the truth is that God trains us in everyday thing. I mean, Oswald Chambers said that God gives us a vision, and then he takes us down into the valley where he batters us into the shape of that vision. And it is in that valley where so many faint and give way. Well, the truth is that valley is where we work. That valley is where we go to school. That valley is the roommates that we have. That valley is, it's everyday life. It's common everyday life where he is training us. And if we don't see that, if we keep looking for the quote big training experiences, we'll miss it.
Yeah.
And it will just go on and on and on because we're not getting trained.
Yeah. Well, or we'll keel over dead like an eagle.
Exactly. Yeah.
or like gymnasts. If I tried to be a gymnast, oh my word, what would happen? I'd have to start. Maybe I'll have to start training with Gary. We'll see. But Gary, thank you so much for just lending some great insight to this. Again, folks, the book is It's Your Call. I've been talking to Gary Barkalow. Find out more about him and what he is up to at thenobleheart.com. And we will have that link on the blog as well as a link to the book so you can check it out. So thanks so much for all that you do, Gary, and for being really just tuned, I think, to the Lord's heart in this, and a lot of wisdom there that's great for our folks. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Every week I hear a story of a miracle, and if I'm honest, I'm tired of seeing on it all. I don't need to see a dead man come alive. All I want is you to fill me up inside.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I have one of our fabulous counselors in the studio with me, Jim Grosbeck. Hey!
Well, hi, Lisa. It's good to be here.
Very great to have you. Always a fun face to see here in the Boundless Studio. So, how's your day been?
Well, it's been very good. If you would just tell my wife that, I'm sure she would appreciate hearing that.
Give her an update.
That I'm a fun face, yes.
Yes, okay. Well, we'll do that. We'll make sure to let her know. Well, we're going to have you answer a question today, and I'm sure this will be a fun one for you as well. So I will just read it and let you tackle it from there.
You bet.
Our listener says, my boyfriend's roommate is unemployed, collecting unemployment, not looking for a job, and doesn't pay anything to expenses. He eats my boyfriend's food, drives his car, lives there rent-free, and doesn't show any gratitude. My boyfriend says if he doesn't provide this stuff for him, then he would be homeless, which is probably true. While I love that my boyfriend is so giving toward this guy, I think he is being taken advantage of. What is the Christian response?
Well, we're going to be talking about giving it a different type of gift, and that might be interesting. But let's assume that this roommate is not mentally ill, okay, but rather irresponsible, lazy, unappreciative, and entitled. If he's mentally ill, then what you need to do is contact the appropriate the authorities, and then also his family. But we're going to assume that he isn't. So you're most likely correct. The boyfriend is being taken advantage of and needs to define his role as friend rather than mother or doormat. And furthermore, sleeping underneath a bridge might help his roommate get his act together. The Christian response on this one is really quite simple. Give the roommate $50 and with caring firmness expel him from the apartment immediately. Two verses really come to mind. One is, if you don't work, you don't eat. You can find that in 2 Thessalonians 3:10. The other one is a little bit more interesting, is faithful are the wounds of a friend. That's Proverbs 27:6. Some personal advice that I'd like to give the boyfriend, just in terms of relationships. It's really important to differentiate between intimate relationships. That would be something like a marriage, friendship, ministry opportunities, and also passive dependent persons, which his roommate falls into that category. The first thing he needs to do, your boyfriend, is really establish a community of solid friendships, then they can kind of help him out if he runs into this type of problem again.
Yeah. Well, and it does sound, she doesn't give any indication of like how long this has been going on. I mean, it's one thing if you are out of work and you're going to help a friend out and stuff, but it sounds like he's kind of moved into this expectation almost of this kind of behavior and this kind of help.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, he's just basically unappreciative.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, not only is your stuff mine, but, very, very entitled and very unappreciative. So, we need to kind of give him a piece of cardboard, show him where the nearest bridge is, and to relieve your guilt, give him $50 and wish him well.
All right. Well, good advice. Tough love on this one. I guess some of our answers require that here at the Boundless Show. And definitely good advice, I think, for those of us that are looking at our own situations and either wondering, could I get into this kind of situation as the person who enables someone, or could I be the person that is going to be tempted to freeload off of someone when I'm in a difficult spot or whatever. So either way, I think we have to be careful, and look towards responsibility. What is right? What's appropriate? What are good boundaries? So
absolutely.
Jim, thanks so much for weighing in on this.
You bet.
All right, everyone, that is it for this week's show. Write to us at editor@boundless.org if you want to submit a question for the future, because we love to answer them. All of our questions that we deal with here on the show are real questions that have come in from you all, so we can't believe how many different topics are addressed. But until next week, make sure you are listening to the shows and keeping up on them. Let us know what you think. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.